on material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics with comics where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody, you have made it once again. It's The Green Room. I'm Vilmos, your host. I really appreciate you listening. And for those of you that don't know how you found us, we're at www.greenroomradio.net, also on iTunes, which you can find on our website as well. Also want to remind you that this is an unedited show. We do not watch our language on this show if we don't feel like it. So if you are at work, turn us down just a hair. Put your headphones on. Don't want you to get in any trouble. Now, this week, a guy that I've actually known of and talked to over the years many times, but never actually worked with. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into The Green Room, Patrick DeGeer.
How you doing?
I'm good. I want to ask you one thing. What nationality is DeGeer? Because you're a Latino, right?
Yes. My father is Mexican, and my mom is French-Canadian, but when my parents got divorced, I went to my mother's maiden name.
Oh, okay.
It was DeGeer.
So were you raised where?
I was raised in San Diego.
Okay.
Still live there, born and raised.
Uh-huh.
But the neighborhood that I grew up in was predominantly Latino.
Uh-huh.
I have quite a bit of a... I have quite a bit, you know, of an influence of the Latino culture, you know, versus the French culture. Considering I wasn't, you know, surrounded by a bunch of French Canadians.
Well, it just means you can stay in a fight, is what it means. Now,
true.
You speak Spanish fluently, I imagine?
No.
Well, you don't.
No. I would be considered a pocho.
What's? I'm sorry, I've never heard that term. Is that
pocho? Is someone that's of Hispanic descent that doesn't speak Spanish?
Not even enough to know what people are saying.
Enough to order at the Taco Bell drive-thru. That's about it.
Oh, good for you. Then you've beat me by a half a mile right there. I don't even know that much. I keep calling them. Barritos, and see, I don't think that works. I thought barrio and rito is how they went together. Anyway, that bad joke withstanding, you started out not necessarily, were you going to be a comic growing up? Did you know that's what you wanted to do?
You know what? I have a real unique story in regards to that. I had graduated from high school and went to San Diego State and was majoring in criminal justice. Got picked up to go into the police academy out in San Diego, and I started losing my vision shortly thereafterwards because of an eye disease called optic neuritis. Optic neuritis is closely associated with MS, multiple sclerosis.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, I don't have MS, but it's nerve damage, so the bad vision that I have isn't correctable with lasers, glasses, surgery, none of that. You know, got bad vision. But I was able to turn, you know, that negative into a positive. And I started going to open mics, you know, more as a means of self-therapy for myself. Had some early success, and one thing led to another to another. And 12, 13 years later, I'm still doing stand-up.
So as far as the vision goes, What is your world like? Do you see just everything blurry? Do you have any sight left at all?
Yeah, my peripheral vision is still quite good. It's the center that's distorted quite a bit. You know, a good way to look at it, would be to sort of figure out if your eyes were dilated. That's pretty much what my center is like. So there's a lot that I can do, but there's a lot I can't do. You know, I can't drive.
Okay.
One of my biggest passions I'm no longer able to do is play baseball. You know, it just would be a bit too dangerous.
Yeah, but you'd be great stealing. You could steal on anyone.
That's true.
Never have to look.
I might be stealing the wrong base, though. That might
Hey, we don't have to talk about results. Let's just talk about that you had a result.
That's true. So, yeah, so that's for my – and, you know, the thing that's sometimes frustrating when you tell someone that you have a loss of vision is, you know, people figure that you either see or you don't see.
Right.
And there's so many levels in between. And, you know, I try to educate people. When someone says that they're legally blind or they have a loss of vision, you need to understand that there are different levels to it. You know, a lot of people are legally blind when those glasses come off.
Sure.
But they can still adjust and do a number of things. You just might not be able to drive or read. So that's pretty much where I'm at with my loss of vision. But it's been stabilized for about 14 years. So it hasn't gotten worse. So I'm thankful for that. And, you know, hopefully one year, you know, something will come up that they can, you know, cure the nerve damage, correct it.
Right. And, well, technology's getting to be amazing anyway.
Yeah, but then I might not want to see what I've been missing all these years. So.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, speaking of that, us comics, we talk about things around us, and, you know, a lot of guys don't talk about their personal life. I know you do. Can you watch TV? I mean, how do you get your news? And
you know, that's a great question. You know what's so funny is I have a humongous TV at my house, and I got to sit up right on it. You know how your parents would always tell you, you sit too close, you're going to ruin your vision?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
My vision's already jacked,
so
I have to sit up close. Which is funny because no one ever wants to play video games with me because I got to hug up the whole TV. They're like, dude, I can't see. You're winning. That's not fair. But it's funny. You always know what room I've been in because there's always a chair pulled up right up on the TV. So, yeah, but you know, but when I get that close, I'm able to see quite a bit. And you know, I feel as though I don't miss that much. The weird thing, though, I tell you what, Vilmos, is I've had bad vision for so long, I sort of forget what it is to have good vision.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's been such a long time, you know. The good thing, though, that I have going for me, though, even though I have a loss of vision, is at least I had vision, 100% vision at one time, so I'm able to have a really good sense of what things are or what things could look like, should look like if I, you know, don't have a full comprehension of something. Like a lot of times, like if I take my kids to the zoo, from a distance, I'm not able to see the animals, you know. But, you know, if I'm being told what it is, I could sort of imagine what it must look like. Someone who's been blind since birth doesn't have any concept of
right.
what something looks like.
Right.
So I'm very grateful that I had vision for the majority of my life, and up until 14 years ago, you know, being struck with this, you know, I've been able to adjust and move forward. So.
Well, I know, like, you walking around, nobody would probably even know because you don't
no.
you don't use like any kind of a cane or seeing eye dog or any. Can you identify people if they
no.
don't speak?
You know what? That's a great question. From distances, no. You know. I was when I first started losing my vision, I went to a Disney store, and when I started to lose my vision, you're in denial. And I think a lot of people that are listening right now, you know, go into that denial phase when something negative happens in their life. Oh, it's not me. It's, you know, you sort of deny it. And,
right.
And I tried, you know, sort of ignoring, you know, the signs as, you know, I'm fine. And, you know, I went into this Disney store, and we had a small child at the time. And there was a kid there, and I just immediately walked up to the kid thinking it was mine and grabbed it.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't my kid.
Oh, dude.
So from distances, I have to be careful. I got to be really careful because I can see the person, but I can't see the detail. Again, if your eyes are dilated, I'm sure you can see the people in front of you, but you might have a hard time figuring out, you know, unless you get right up close, who that person is.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of times I actually recognize people from the sound of their voices or, you know, from other things that I might be able to recognize them from.
You can get me for my shape, just so you know, next time I come. I look a lot like a pear with two sticks underneath it. That's what I look like, not green. How's your, you must have a good relationship with the radio then. Is the radio kind of your key thing to get information?
You know
all?
What? I used to listen to the radio a lot. I'm a big Fox News guy. So pretty much when I'm on the road, I put it on Fox News and listen to that all day long.
Sure.
Or ESPN. Those are my two favorite radio stations, you know.
Excellent.
You know, and of course I listen to my Raiders on KFO.
I thought that being in Southern California, growing up there and all, you would be a Chargers fan.
Hey, we got more Raider fans than Charger fans. Well, maybe not right now.
I was going to say, are you sure that's not just because you associate with those people?
Hey, you know what? My family, my dad is originally from Oakland, and I'm just a die-hard Raider. I am so passionate. We could actually turn this into Raider Hour, but we'll talk about other things. But I tell you what, die-hard Raider fan through and through. No matter what, I wear my jerseys on stage, even when the Raiders are 2-14. You know, plus they're authentic. I spent enough money. I gotta wear them up on stage. I'm just lucky I didn't buy Jamarcus Russell. And I was debating, who do I buy, Jamarcus Russell or McFadden? I bought McFadden. I'm thinking, well, McFadden isn't doing that much better than Russell, but at least, you know, he has the potential to be with the Raiders for another couple of years. I'm not sure if Russell's going to be there much longer.
Yeah, but you didn't go off the reservation, so to speak, with baseball. You're a Padres fan, right?
Yes.
You're confused. That's be what it is. You're just confused.
Blame it on the blindness.
Is that it? You thought Oakland Raiders helmet was actually a Chargers helmet, and that's where the big mistake happened.
You know what it is? I like baseball, but I'm passionate about football.
Huh.
I would look if the Clippers were still in San Diego, I'd be a Clipper fan. But football is the one sport that I follow, and man, they had me at birth. So
well,
I'm sticking with them.
Okay, if you say so, I'm going to stand back and kind of hold my judgment for a while just to see. Now we're speaking to you from an undisclosed location in Cleveland. Is that where you are?
Yes.
Cleveland? Yes. Do you work in a Cleveland Improv this week? How are things there?
Good. You know, I love coming out to Cleveland. I've been coming out here to this improv for a number of years. Great audiences. You got to bring it out here, you know. I think you would agree with me, Vilmos. You know, some comedy clubs, you know, around the country can be a little bit more difficult than others.
Sure.
And, the room takes on a vibe. And love performing at the Improvs, at the Funny Bones. Those are great, great chains. But this Cleveland Improv, if you don't bring it and you're not real, you might look a bit amateurish up on stage. You can't take that stage for granted. And that's the reason why I like it. You know, you got to really bring it and be real. And they're expecting a lot from you. So I just love coming out here to Cleveland.
Well, I can say that's a tough nut to crack, even getting into that club. I had the weirdest experience. The old booker there was the gal. What was her name?
Sarah Nye.
I had gotten in with her. Somebody had gotten me her name and got me booked in the three clubs she booked at one time, which was Evansville, Cleveland, and then there was Buffalo. CBS used to book those three rooms. And they booked me in there as an opener, and I had gotten messages from other people that I was on the schedule and all that other stuff, and I made the mistake of calling to verify my booking, and it pissed her off, and I never worked at any of those clubs.
Wow, God forbid if you confirm something, huh?
Well, it was really weird. I felt like I was doing the right thing because I wanted to make sure I had it right. I didn't want to
have called in. You should have come in drunk, and then
Or maybe had a fight in front of the audience, from the front row. I actually know a comedian that did that. Brought her boyfriend in, and they had a fight in the middle of the show. These people are crazy. And that brings, you know what? That brings kind of an interesting thing for me. Why is it, do you think, that the comics that are just absolute fucking messes, they can't get their life in order, they can't get their shit together. You know, they're funny on stage. I'm not going to say they're bad. They're not going to be the greatest comics in the world. But why is it all these people continue to work?
You know, that's a good question. You know,
I mean, you got guys like you out there. You've just been plugging it out and working hard, and it's working for you. But there are a lot of guys like you that aren't getting that opportunity, too, because these other wastes of spaces are in there.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a lot of comics that you're, you know, I mean, trust me, there's been a lot of assholes I've met in this business that you're thinking, wow, how the hell did you get to this level? But, you know, it's like what you and I talked about before. You know, comedy is so subjective, and it doesn't make sense. And that's the one thing, you know, I would never drop a name. There are definitely a number of comics that you just wonder, how in the hell are you doing what you're doing at this club at that position? But again, you know, who am I to figure out what's funny and what's not? I don't, you know. I mean, I think the one thing I've noticed the longer I've been doing stand-up, it's more and more about numbers. You know, you could be the most funny, talented, original, clever comedian out there. But unless you're selling tickets, you know, a lot of times that's what the club looks at. And I remember a good friend of mine told me one time, you know, it's not about the talent, it's about how many breadsticks you're selling. And
yeah.
I really have a much better idea now of what he meant when he said that. You know, it's definitely about the business, and at the same time, I can understand why the club needs to have those seats filled. So, you know, I guess to answer your question, you know, maybe those guys that aren't, you know, the most professional, they're still filling out seats. And when I think of some of those comics that aren't that professional, actually they do sell out some of those rooms. So, you know, I guess you go with the greater good, which is, hey, I got to put some seats, have them filled up, and I'll go with this comic who's not necessarily the easiest to work with, but he's going to make me some money.
Sure. Well, and to that end, and I'm not trying to be critical here, I do a little research on everybody before I go, you know, go talk to them. And you don't have a web. Do you have a website?
No, you know what? I'm actually in the process of building one. Is that? I'm still working with an abacus. I'm old school.
Really?
No, you know what?
You
know, a lot of people have asked me, Patrick, why don't you have a website?
Right.
And, you know, I've been, I don't want to come across as arrogant, but I've been extremely successful for the most part without even having a website.
Right.
And, but it's getting to the point now where I'm starting to come across, wow, I got to really get a website. You know, it's sort of like, you know, finally, okay, I got to get with the times. So I'm actually going to be building one here in the next couple of months.
Are you on Facebook?
No, I got Facebook, Twitter, none of that. And that's some stuff I know. And you know what? Considering how much I headline, that's something that I know I've been needing to do for quite some time.
Yeah.
But up until the last couple of years, I didn't really have the need for it. But the more that people want to follow me or, you know,
yes,
stalk
you.
Doing.
Don't forget stalkers. Those are very important.
Hey, that's not a bad thing. I won't see them coming.
That's a very, very important part of your fan base. So,
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to take our first break here, folks. We'll be right back with a man who has rejected the internet, Patrick Tregear, right after this. Are you looking for high-speed internet service? Are you looking for personal service? Try Colorado High-Speed Internet Services. Great people to deal with. They service over 15 states throughout the Southwest. They're a great company to deal with, very reliable, and the personal touch. Reach them through their website, www.cohsi.net. Or you can contact them by phone, 719-404-3311. All right, back with Patrick Tregear, a man who's flipped off the internet. I wanted to ask you, one of the things I really admire about you is your connection with your kids. A lot of comics get into the business, and I'm going to be critical here. They pretty much abandon their family, and mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of respect for those guys. I won't lie. If you're putting your kids second to your comedy career, I kind of don't understand that. I think you can at least make them a tie. And you've always had a good commitment to your family. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know what? No. I'm sorry. No, you know what? Wow, that's funny how you bring that up. And for the listeners, Vilmos and I did not have any idea what we were going to be talking about for the most part. And when you bring up family, you know, I got a real strong opinion in regards to that because it almost broke up my family. When I first started doing stand-up, and I still feel this way, I think if you are going to be successful, and I mean extremely successful in whatever occupation you choose, but let's focus with stand-up, I think that occupation has to come first and foremost. And that means that your wife, kids have to be placed second. You know, when I first started doing stand-up, there was many times that I missed a birthday or missed a holiday. And, you know, the road calls you or showcases or TV spots. And, you know, you miss out on a lot. But if you're going to be at the upper echelon of your profession, you know, it really has to be that thing first and everything else second. I mean, now, at the same time, you know, I think a lot of times you come back to regret that. And I know I was working the road 3 weeks a month, sometimes 4 weeks a month. And I tell you what, the relationship became strained and we started having some problems, and I had to take a step back and realize maybe be home one extra week, you know. And then the longer you do stand up, you look at your kid, and it's like, wow, you know, this kid grew up. Steve McGrew, Mudflap, told me a great story that made me really realize what I was doing. He said every time he would take off on the road, his kid would be like, Dad, why are you leaving? Why are you leaving? And Steve would tell his son, well, I got to get you some toys, right? That's what you like. And this kid's like, oh, okay. And, you know, Steve went on the road, and after a couple of years, his kid, you know, one time came up to him again and said, hey, Dad, why are you leaving on the road again? He's like, well, hey, you want that new toy, right? And his kid told him, Dad, I got enough toys. And I was like, wow. When Steve told me that story, and it made me realize, hey, you know, you got to really think about your priorities. And it's that love and hate relationship. I think when you're in this business long enough, the road eventually does bear on you. I remember hopping and skipping to go on the road. And there, you know, and don't get it twisted. I love doing stand-up. It's my life. It's not even a job. I'm so fortunate, so grateful to be able to get up on the stages and theaters and be on TV and entertain the troops overseas and work with great comics. You know, it is a blessing. At the same time, it's like what I tell people, I love what I hate because I have to be away from the family. And I got four kids. And but I also think that there's a difference between being an absent father who's just being absent and being an absent father who's out there working. And when you're home, the emphasis has to be on the kids. Unfortunately, when I'm home a lot of times, I'm performing at the Laugh Factory or at the Improvs in Brea, Irvine, Ontario, working the Ice House.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's real tough. And I definitely do try my best to be there for the kids. But, you know, my kid is getting an award on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, and I'm going to be in Reno. I catch a rising star. I'm going to miss it. You know, I mean, it comes with the territory. It really does.
Yeah, but what I'm referring to is the guys that never see their kids. They don't talk to their kids. They don't have interactions with their kids. When you're on the road, you're still talking to your family.
I do, even though I don't do a lot of phone calls. Hurt me, you know. I'll take the phone call, but I don't initiate it. That's just my world.
Really?
You know, if they need to talk to their dad, I'm going to be there. But you know, calling them on the phone sometimes makes me realize how much I miss them, and I try, you know, sort of warped, but that's the way I get to sort of manage my world, you know. Of
sure.
course, I'll take their call, but I don't go out of my way to, you know, to sort of realize what I'm missing, you know.
Yeah, but see, I don't equate, when I made my statement in the beginning, I don't equate it necessarily with you being there every night and you making every awards banquet or any of that other crap. That's not what I was talking about. I'm talking about being emotionally there for your kids. And
everything
you're describing, you are.
Yeah.
If your kids need you,
sure.
you're there.
For sure.
You're home,
sure.
they're your focus. As much as you can make it your focus.
Yeah, you're no different, you know what?
You know, I just have a problem with the guys that just forget they have kids.
Yeah, plus you gotta be good to them. One day I'm gonna need to be driven, and I'm not gonna have to rely on another open micer to drive me. I'll be able to have my son drive me. He'll be like, "Dad, you were cool to me all these years. I'll take care of you."
So you're raising chauffeurs, is what you're raising.
Exactly. Got no qualms saying that. That's right. My wife, God knows, she's tired of waiting in the parking lot reading her People magazine for me to finish up my routine. Hurry up.
Yeah, isn't it funny how the missus or your significant other, or whatever. Really, they're not as enamored with the comedy business after a while.
No, you know what's so funny is when someone tells you, you know, hey, can you do my room? You're like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, can you bring a bunch of your friends? I'm like, dude, I'm not an open micer. If I could bring one of my friends to one of my shows, I would be impressed. If I could bring my wife to actually step into a comedy club, the only time my wife will step into a comedy club is if one of my good friends is performing, and maybe she's only seen that comic once or twice, she'll be like, okay, I'll go see him. So she's gone during my set, and then she'll come back out during...
Exactly. She's there to see the other guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I got it.
So for those people that are listening, I just find it to be extremely funny when someone is like, yeah, I got this room. I'm going to bring a bunch of people. Right away, you know that's an amateur. It's like, wow, you haven't been doing comedy for that long.
Boy,
because
the
by the time you get to a certain level, oh, dude, they're like, you're still doing this? Really?
Yeah, you were kind of funny around the house, but I don't know.
Yeah,
that's the other one you hear a lot. Well, that's cool. How old are your kids right now?
They're between the ages of 12 and 4.
And have any of them seen you do stand-up?
Oh, yeah. You know what's really neat is that they've seen me perform in Reno. And you know, I'm out there signing autographs, and like, wow, my dad's signing autographs.
You took him to Reno with you. Cool.
Yeah. You know what? I I'll never do that again because it just gets too expensive. You know, when you're in Reno, you can stay in your room all day long, you know, and then they're like, Dad, this is not getting fun. You know, there's not enough channels, especially the casinos. They're not going to give you a bunch of channels. They want you out on the floor.
Exactly.
So they're like, okay, we're going to go to Circus Circus. And by the time I took them to Circus Circus, took them to the mall, did this, did that, I was losing money. And it's like, dude, this is not cool. You know, you mean I got to get up at 6 and take you to breakfast? I'm used to getting up at 12, 1, 2. So I was like, dude, this is not good. This is definitely not good.
Well,
they've definitely seen their dad perform before.
And do they think it's pretty cool, or are they just
Their friends think it's super cool. They've had me come in for career day, and that's been a lot of fun. Yeah, their friends think that's the coolest thing. It's like, wow, you don't even work.
Well, here's the thing. I want to ask you about career day. In my town, I don't live in a big town like San Diego. My town is 3,500 people. And I was asked every year to come in and talk about the entertainment business for Career Day. And here was my take. Every year for 30 minutes, I tried to talk them out of going into the entertainment business. I preached to them to have a backup plan. I would talk about being on stage and all that stuff, but I said, look, your chances of making it in the business and being famous are like playing first base for the New York Yankees. You just got to have a backup plan. And for all my efforts, I thought I did pretty good until last year. There's a kid in my town that decided he wanted to do comedy. And I took him around to a couple places. And one day we're on the way home from Denver, and he says, you're the reason I'm in comedy. I said, really? He says, I remember in the eighth grade when you came in and did that. He goes, I listened to every word of it. And that was the day I decided to be a comedian. And I looked at him and I said, weren't you listening to a word I said? Because I really wanted to try to talk them all out of it. But was yours more positive than mine when you went to career day?
I sort of made it cool.
You're helping them out.
You know what you should have done is taken that student to a condo. And
or maybe a one-nighter. I'll take him on a triple run.
Yeah, exactly. Go, hey, this is a condo that you're going to be sleeping in. And, I do agree. The one thing I'll say about stand-up, and I think you would agree with me on this, is when I first got started into stand-up, there was a manager that told me the beautiful thing about stand-up is that there is a middle class. And you can make a very, very, very good living doing stand-up and never be a household name.
That's true.
Granted, I agree with you. Being a star, whether it's a George Lopez, Rock, or Seinfeld, that's like winning the lottery. But I think that there's still a lot of comics out there that aren't household names. Like James Gregory. I guarantee you a lot of people have no idea who James Gregory is.
No.
Unless you're in the South. But the guy has done phenomenally well.
I think he's a millionaire from doing
that. Yeah. And a lot of comics can make their money up on merchandise, so forth and so on. I've been fortunate. So, but at the same time, though, it's funny how you bring that up as well, because I got a friend of mine who makes about $35,000-$40,000 a year. He wants to go into stand up, and I think if you're going to make stand up your thing, you have to have it be your passion, and you can't be going to open mics once a week, twice a week, thinking that you're going to make it. You got to either jump in it both feet, or are you pretty much going to be doing it as a hobby for the rest of your life? And I don't know how I could tell him, quit your job making $35,000-$40,000 a year and start working on the road making $200 minus expenses or $300. And then do that for the next 2, 3, 4 years, get bumped up to feature, and then make $400 to $800 a month a week, minus your expenses. And then maybe after, X number of years of doing that, then maybe you'll be in a position where you're comfortable. I can definitely see where you come from or where you came from.
Yeah.
But I wasn't telling them to do stand-up. I was just telling them some of the benefits of it.
Oh, well, and that's cool, but I'm totally negative. And, of course, all three of my kids want to be in the entertainment business. After all my preaching, after all my talking, after everything I've done, my son wants to be a musician. My daughter, middle daughter, is going to be a writer, which I won't count as entertainment, but if she had her choice, she'd be a dancer. And I hope not in one of those strip clubs.
Yeah, exactly.
And my last one's going to Berklee School of Music for vocal stuff. So, the thing about it is nobody listens to me. That's what I figured out. No one listens to me. Maybe somebody's listening to this program, but they're already past where they're going to decide to become a comedian. It just amazes me. And I'll tell you this. You talk about the money you can make. I was talking to a guy the other day that does nothing but corporates. Mm-hmm. And he does not go out for under $5,000. Yeah. And I know this guy, and you know that to be true, that there are some guys that command that kind of money. He did 55 gigs last year. You do the math. Guy made $250,000.
There's a lot of comics out there that, but you know what? You have to realize that it's not, you're not going to make your comedy, you're not going to make the majority of your money at comedy clubs unless you're a big name. But that's what makes this so tough. You know, the more I do this now, Vilmos, you know, a lot of times it's like, oh, you're a corporate comic. You know, you're not a comic. You're a corporate comic.
Yeah, you're not a real comic if you don't.
Exactly. But I tell you what, man, when you hit your 50s and 60s and you still got a roommate living in a two-bedroom apartment, dude, I want to be comfortable. And I think the key is to do what you got to do to make that money, whether it means that you're going to start booking on the side or promoting or doing corporate or doing whatever it takes. The thing about the comedy club, though, is that's your bloodline. That's what led you to want to become a comedian, that dark, dingy, smoke-filled room where you get – because I will tell you this, like the colleges. I've been doing a couple of colleges lately with my loss of vision, like for Disabled Week and this and that.
Yeah.
And colleges pay extremely well.
Yeah.
But the gratitude that you get from a college is completely different from a comedy club. It's just the whole thing from top to bottom. You know, a comic that does the college circuit quite a bit told me the only benefit about the colleges is the money. You know, if you're trying to get satisfied, like, you know, when you're done performing at a comedy club, Vilmos, you just feel good.
Absolutely.
Like, wow, this is great. This is why I'm on stage.
Exactly.
But when you're at a college, you typically don't get that. You know, it's more like, wow, thank God I'm getting paid for this.
Look, you might as well, at some points in time, you feel like you're reading names out of the phone book. Because you don't get big laughs.
No, it's just a different audience. You have to know your audience. Just like if you go to Vegas, it's going to be a lot different a lot of times if you're working at the Riviera versus if you're working the Irvine Improv. There's different audiences and different, you know, groups that come out to those particular rooms, and you have to know your audience. Colleges, you know, you would think that kids are great and it's like, hey, we're going to party. But a lot of times, and now granted, I'm not doing colleges on the level of a Kyle Cease or Daniel Tosh or Cummings, but I've done a handful, and I've talked to other comics that do it quite extensively. And for the most part, you don't get that roar of approval, and they're with you. They're mostly analyzing, because now all of a sudden they're in college, and they're trying to sort of figure out where you're coming from.
Well, here, let me just say it. Let me say it in a less polite way than you're trying to be. They're judgmental assholes. You don't have to say it. I'll say it. They're 18 to 22, and they know everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're judgmental assholes.
Yeah.
They're smarter than their professors. They're smarter than the people that they're trying to get jobs with. They're smarter than everybody. And
But the room itself is most of the time, like the colleges I've done, you know, it's a lit room.
Yeah.
The sound system is barely decent.
Right.
And what I've been hearing, because I've only done a handful of colleges, so by no stretch I'm an expert with colleges, but I hear that a lot of times the turnouts can be really piss poor. You know, it's mostly, hey, come on out, you know, come out to the cafeteria, and you have 20 people in the audience.
Right.
And it's like, wow, okay. I mean, the comedy club, though, is what you love. That's just your bread and butter of your ingredients, you know?
That's the
best. Flour and eggs, I should say, not the bread and butter, the flour and eggs.
That is the best place to see comedy. It doesn't matter. It's better than a theater. I'm not taking away anything from the big guys that go out and do that, like Seinfeld or Ron White or whoever it may be. But if you want to see real comedy and you want to get the full experience, you've got to go to a comedy club. There is no other better way to see it.
Even though I will tell you this, though, Vilmos, I've been, you know, doing stand-up for about 12, 13 years, and the greatest satisfaction for me, though, is performing for the troops overseas.
Stop right there, because that's after our next break. So since he brought it up, he's forced me to go to break early. Ladies and gentlemen, a man who is shit on the internet but loves our troops. We'll be right back with Patrick Tugera in a minute.
Are you or your company in need of website design or maintenance? Maybe you can try the people we use, Branya Consulting. We've been using them since April of 2008 when we started the show, and they've done a great job for us ever since. They're very cost-effective and conscientious. I think they do a good job for you. There's a link to them at the bottom of every page on our new website, greenroomradio.net. So give them a try, Branya Consulting, for all your web services needs.
All right, back with Patrick Tugera. That's what my next segment was. You're not supposed to be getting ahead of me, Patrick. This is awful.
Okay.
I was going to say, talking about different audiences and different environments, you specialize in the going out and perform for the troops. I know you've done a lot of USO tours, and don't you kind of have your own USO tour?
Yeah, it's not so much you. I worked a lot with Armed Forces Entertainment. There's USO. USO is the one that works with the big celebrities. AFE is another group, whatever you want to call it, that works with the military, that's based out of Langley in this Armed Forces Entertainment. But I also promote and book my own tours. You know, just got back doing a tour in Korea, and I performed for the troops at Guantanamo Bay.
You know how I know you do that for real? Since
How's
I told
that?
People I was going to interview you, I've had three of my comic friends ask me if I could get a booking for them. That's how I know it's real. So when did you start doing the tours for the troops? And how did you actually get into that? Because that can't be easy to start.
No, you know what? You've known about me for quite some time, and you know how persistent I can be.
Yes.
And when I first started doing stand-up, I wanted so bad to work with Paul Rodriguez. And I figured, you know what? I'm going to hit Camp Pendleton, which is a Marine base up in San Diego, and I'm going to ask them, why don't we hire Paul Rodriguez to come out to entertain for the troops and their spouses and family and friends? And they're like, we'll figure out what the price is, and we'll get it done. So got it done, got to perform with Paul Rodriguez, and started working with the military. Since then, the budgets have dropped significantly. There's been a lot of changes. But regardless, I have continued to work with different bases, and you know, one thing leads to another. You start to build a name out there, and, you know, started working with Armed Forces Entertainment, where I was able to get some experience of going overseas, and started to build a really good reputation for bringing out some solid comedians, lineups from top to bottom. I wouldn't compromise on the lineup just for the sake to compromise it, and started getting some bigger and better tours that were more lucrative, and before long, you know, I'm at where I'm at right now. I had to stop working for Armed Forces Entertainment because of budget cuts. Their per diem that the comics are getting paid a day dropped so significantly that I wasn't able to put together a tour that I would feel comfortable doing. You know, unfortunately, there's been some other comics that have been able to put together tours, you know, that I wouldn't necessarily be proud of, that are just going out there, you know, just to put together a tour. I've always thought, look, if I can't put together something that I don't feel comfortable with, I'm not going to put it together.
Right.
But from what I understand, you know, so, you know, but I still do my own stuff, and I work quite extensively with the military and have a lot of great contacts, and it's been a blast. Because those, the troops are the ones that can really use it. You know, I was being interviewed once by the Stars and Stripes, and I was like, the difference between a comedy club and performing on a military base is when you're at a comedy club, they want to laugh. On a military base, they need to laugh, especially when you go to Iraq, you know, and I had the pleasure of going out there and performing for the troops where, my gosh, you're doing some of these forward operating bases, FOBs for short, or combat outposts, COPs for short. I mean, they're still burning their feces and urine. They're eating MREs. You know, your stage is the ground. Your mic is a bottle of water. So at least you have something in your hand that you can grab. It feels natural. No sound system. They're looking at you, dead tired. They just got back from patrol, and they just need an escape, whether it's for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And, you know, a lot of my friends have told me, you know, you have four kids. Why are you going overseas and putting yourself at risk? And this is the way I look at it. I have a talent that I can share with others, and I think that should be shared. And I think as society, a lot of times it's too much me. And there's a lot of fathers out there and mothers out there that are fighting for our country, and we expect them to put their lives on the line for us.
Yeah.
So I think what's good for us should be good for them, and vice versa.
Right.
So hey, if I put myself in danger, I don't care. You know, they can use the laughter, you know? And if I can share that with them, damn it, I'm going to share it with them.
No.
And I'm really adamant about that.
Now, do you is there certain types of material, of course, excluding anti-military material, that doesn't work, or can you pretty much do any kind of material while you're out there?
You know, it's the material that they don't want you talking about the commander-in-chief, you know?
Right.
You know, whether or not you agree with them, you know, keep politics out. How about that? You keep politics out. You know, any joke that deal with drugs, you know,
can you do relationship humor? Does that work for them?
Oh yeah. Relationship. Yeah. Because of the fact that a lot of them, their wives and husbands are at home and they have problems. So relationship works well.
Huh.
They're, you know, any jokes about gays, stuff like that, you know, common sense. You know, it's not corporate by any stretch.
Right.
But at the same time, an Air Force base, they want it definitely cleaner than an Army-Navy base. And an Army-Navy base, you know, it's not going to be as doesn't need to be as clean as an Air Force base, but it's not going to be as raunchy as a Marine base. Now, if you want to do your Def Jam, F this, F that, you know, you can go to a number of Marine bases overseas where that's more acceptable, and that's what their audience wants. Like, if you go to Okinawa, you know, it's going to be, you know, this and that and no holds bar.
It's a free-for-all.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you go to an Air Force base, it's going to be a lot different. So, again, you got to know your audience. You know, you have to know if it's an officer's club, if it's an enlisted club, if it's an all-hands club. There's a lot of dynamics that go into putting together a tour and knowing the type of comics that are going to work well.
Yeah.
I've been real fortunate, though. I've had a lot of comics coming out. I've had, like, Johnny Sanchez from Mad TV do a number of my military tours. Butch Bradley, Ruben Paul. Ruben Paul was one of the first comics on George Lopez's new talk show. J.R. Brow, Robert Hawkins, Dale Jones. I've been very, very fortunate with the quality that I've had go out there. Todd Rex, T-Rex, just been really fortunate that I've had a lot of good friends that have been willing to go out for me and perform for the troops. I mean, I know I'm missing a bunch.
Well,
dude, you didn't even mention my name. Well,
that's okay. They weren't important. Important... have you had anybody that did something that caused you to have to ship them home? You know, like the old thing you hear at the cruise ship where some guy offends somebody and he's gone?
Yes. No. You know what? I make sure, dude, that's not going to be – first and foremost, most of the – I would say 99% of the comics that I book, I've seen perform or have a strong, strong recommendation. But the military, that's my life, dude. And I'm not going to have someone come in and screw it up.
Right.
So I'm extremely particular to who I bring out, who I hire, And they know the rules. They know the rules. They know it well. And considering, you know, how much I book, if they want to burn a bridge with me, then it's going to take one time. I'm going to yank you off the stage, and you're not going to be working again.
Right.
So, you know, they definitely, definitely know the rules. Sometimes at the end of the show, I got to tell them, dude, it's not going to work out. You know, if you can't follow directions, I'm not going to bring you overseas.
Right.
You know, and I know bookers that have lost tours overseas because of what comics have done, or even in the States, you know, and in the military, you got to remember, even when you're on a base, it might be a comedy night, but you're not at a comedy club. You're on a military base.
Right.
And just because you're a comic doesn't mean that you have, you know, carte blanche, and that you can do whatever you want. You know,
right.
There are rules that you got to stick to. But I tell you what, man, there are some of the most appreciative audiences that you will ever, ever perform in front of.
That's what I've heard.
It's very addicting. It's extremely addicting.
That's what I've heard. Now, do you sell, and this is another stupid thing, comics sell merchandise when they go out and do comedy. Never ask anybody, is that allowed, or do you take things to give them?
With Armed Forces Entertainment, they'll give you money to buy your merchandise to sell, to give, I should say, to the troops. So let's say, for sake of argument, your T-shirts cost $5 each to make.
Yeah.
They'll give you, let's say, $100. You buy 20 T-shirts, and then you give those shirts out. When you go overseas to Iraq, Afghanistan, you don't sell at all. You don't.
Right.
If you're going to Japan, Korea, places in the state, you sell.
Huh.
It all depends where you're at. In other words, if it's a war theater, a theater of war, you don't sell.
Right.
But if it's like a lot of comics would bring their merchandise to Guantanamo Bay, and they love it. You know, the people love buying that stuff. You know, there's not a lot to do on Guantanamo Bay.
Well, it's a piece of home too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it all depends where you're at. It all depends where you're at.
That's cool. All right. Well, listen, I will say this: we've hit the end of the show, my friend. Yeah, I know. It's I know. Usually you hear a sigh of relief on the other side of the phone. We're glad that you came onto the show this week, and thank you very much for all the things you do for the troops. I think that's a great thing.
Oh, no problem. Hey, do I get to come back to the green room when I'm at last?
As a matter of fact, you will. I was going to say.
That is great. This was very fun. You were saying it's laid back.
Yeah.
You know. It's like with the Bob and Tom show, you know, which I've done. There's so much preparation behind it, and it's sort of nice to be able to just have a show where you can just be like, hey, let's just talk, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, Patrick, like not generally I don't cross promote to another club, but Patrick will be back on for the week of February 12th, 13th, which is when he'll be in Tucson. He's nice enough. He's going to be filling in for somebody that couldn't make it. But the task at hand is to make sure everybody comes to see you at Catch a Rising Star in Reno.
That's true.
It's in the Silver Legacy Casino, for those of you that may not know, and our newer listeners. In fact, even worth it to get in your car and drive there or hop a plane, because Southwest is going there now. I rate Reno better than Vegas any day right now. I really do. It's a great place to go. Casinos are nice. I heard they're set to pay out at 110%, but that's just what I've heard. I can't be positive about such things. In any case, though, I am positive you should see Patrick at the Catch a Rising Star. He's going to be there the 26th to the 31st. That's a Tuesday through a Sunday. They have a show every night at 7:30. On Fridays and Saturdays, they have a second show that starts at 10 o'clock. You can get your tickets online at Ticketmaster, or you can call their box office, 775-329-4777, or you can hit them up on Facebook just to keep track of what's going on. They're at facebook.com/CatchARisingStarReno. And remember, like I tell you folks, see your comedy live. That's the way you're supposed to do it. If you can't make it to Catch a Rising Star this weekend, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.